All right, so this is the part where you're supposed to go ahead and ask questions. Okay, so review. We have some problems we want to do?
Yeah. Like a homework problem, is that what?
Anything. Or examples of things specifically. Something that looks like it might be on the test.
We could do debt on page 62, number 5.
Well, I'm not to get warmed up until we find some more. Okay, Detman. Page 62, number 5. And it says, find all possible solutions of sine z equals I. So that's a good one. That's a recent one, one from our memory.
I thought it was sine z equals 1.
Huh?
It's I.
I have I.
My book said 1.
You think? Well, anyway, is it all right if we do this one since I wrote it?
Let me look at that because that would explain why I didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, I'm Jenny wants to hear it. Jenny wants to see it anyway.
Mine is.
Huh?
Mine does say I, and I thought it was 1 for
okay.
Some
well, let's go through it anyway. Okay. So, the question is, how do you solve this? What you have to do is replace z with x plus iy. And we have to know how to do sine of x plus iy, which also could show up on the test. So what do we have? Sine of x cosine of iy plus sine iy cosine x. Alright, so we could just expand this out. Sine of the sum of two angles. Okay. And we know that the cosine of iy, if you look at the form for the cosine of an angle, cosine of theta is e to the I theta plus e to the minus I theta divided by 2. We should know that. All right, so if I put an iy in place of theta, I get e to the minus y and an e to the plus y. So this gives me a hyperbolic cosine. And with enough practice, you could just write that down. Similarly, we could go over and do a sine theta. The difference being, we get a negative sine, and we'd be dividing by 2i. So if you go through that, put in the iy's, you get e to the minus y, minus e to the plus y over 2i, which is almost hyperbolic sine. All right, and actually you get an I times the hyperbolic sine of y cosine x. So the first thing you need to do with this problem is to realize this. When is the equal to I? Well, now with this expanded, I can write down the real part is 0, the imaginary part is 1. Alright, and if you had put a 1 there, you do it the other way. Alright. And then you get two equations and two unknowns. So this implies that sine x cosh y equals 0, sinh y cosine x equals 1. So we get two equations and two unknowns. And we need to determine all x and y that make these simultaneously true. The thing to do is to take a look at the easy one, which is the first one has 0 in it. I can make this 0 if sine x is 0 or cos y is 0. Okay? But a hyperbolic cosine is never 0. Alright, it's the sum of two exponentials, and the exponential is not 0. So this case is out. Sine x equal to 0 means that x must be a multiple of pi. Okay? Remember, x and y are real. So that's why I can do what I just did. Alright, x is a multiple of pi. So we go back and we plug that in to the second equation that I haven't used yet. So I can satisfy the first equation if x is a multiple of pi, an integer multiple. And so now we have the hyperbolic sine of y times the cosine of n pi equals 1. Cosine of n pi, I could write it a little simpler. What's the cosine of n pi? All right, let's see. N is an integer. Let's say if n is 0, what's cosine of 0? 1.
Write that negative 1 to the n.
And if n is 1, cosine of pi is? Negative 1. If n is 2? Okay, so for the various values of n, we get this is important. Cosine n pi is either plus or minus 1. And in fact, if n is even, it's 1, and if n is odd, it's minus 1, which you can write as minus 1 to the n. So that's an important thing that will come up. Therefore, hyperbolic sine of y is going to be equal to minus 1 to the n. All right, 1 over that is the same thing. Okay. So hyperbolic sine of y is either 1 or minus 1. Can the hyperbolic sine be negative?
I don't think so.
It's an odd function.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, let's see what's the hyperbolic sine look like. Something like that. Okay, so we're going to have a value here of, it's going to be 1 for some value of y, and over here it's going to be minus 1 for some other value. So that's doable. Now the question is, what is y? Again, it depends upon whether n is even or odd. So I could let n be 2k or 2k plus 1. All right, pick out those cases or whatever. All right, so here's another little algebra question. All right, let me do it this way. Case 1, n is even. So we have the hyperbolic sine of y must be equal to 1. Can we solve for y? And the answer is yes. Hyperbolic sine is e to the y plus e to the minus y, hyperbolic sine is e to the y minus e to the minus y over 2. We can solve this for e to the y. This is an equation in quadratic form. So multiply simplify 2, I get 2 is equal to e to the y minus e to the minus y. Multiply by e to the y, I get 2 e to the y is equal to e to the y squared minus 1. And so you see, this is really an equation that's in quadratic form, something one learns back in algebra. E to the y squared minus 2 e to the y minus 1. And we can solve that quadratic for e to the y. So e to the y is minus b, which is 2, plus or minus the square root of b squared, which is 4, minus 1 times 4 is plus 4, divided by 2a. So that's going to be what? 1 plus or minus the square root of 2. Too fast. Okay, so y is the natural log of 1 plus the square root of 2. Because we can't take 1 minus the log of 1 minus the square root of 2, that's negative. Therefore, z must be, I took n was even, so I could write this as 2k pi plus I natural log of 1 plus the square root of 2 for k an integer. Okay? And I'll let you do case 2. All right, we're warmed up.
Page 86, number 6.
Evaluate this, or that's a circle, and integrate it. Now that's the one that I said we could do the other day. Okay. So let's see. I want to compute the integral. Dz over z minus z0. Where z0 is a constant, and c is given by the circle. Modulus z minus z0 is less equal to, so I wrote. Integrate in the counterclockwise direction. Okay, so we need a picture. I need a z0. We have a circle that goes around in a counterclockwise direction. That circle has radius rho. So the idea is we parametrize the curve. Alright, so for all circles, typically, or arcs of circles, our parametrization looks like this. We take z minus z0, and that's rho e to the I theta. All right, z0 is the center, rho is the radius. All complex numbers z that satisfy this equation, as theta goes from 0 to 2 pi, lie on that circle. Okay. In order to do the integral, I need dz. So we compute the differentials here. The derivative of e to the I theta brings down an I. I get an I rho e to the I theta d theta. So my integral dz over z minus z0 around the circle can be converted to an integral where theta goes from 0 to 2 pi. Dz is an I. Okay, here we go. rho e to the I theta d theta. Z minus z zero is rho e to the I theta. The rows cancel. E to the I theta cancels. And so, now you see where your rho went. Did you forget it in the parameterization? Or?
I think I did.
Maybe. So this is 2 pi. This is known as a simple pole. We'll learn about poles after the break. But if I have a simple pole and I integrate it in a circle around that pole, I get a contribution of 2 pi I. That's a key thing that's going to crop up. Okay. Did you find something to ask?
To ask, yeah.
Yeah? All right. I'm getting tired of looking at blue. Let's try green.
32, number
1. Okay. Find the image under the mapping. Okay, that's a nice one. It's relatively straightforward. Find the image. I said relatively. Compared to some things. Of modulus z minus 1 less than or equal to 1 under the mapping w equals 1 over z. What is the region described by modulus z minus 1 is less than or equal to 1? It's actually the circle and the interior, technically. Okay, but right. So we have here, z equals 1 is the center. It's a circle of radius 1. And so we have something that looks like that. I can draw better circles than that on the board. Okay, so that's what this looks like. So it's the interior and the boundary of that circle. There's x, there's y, and this gets mapped somewhere in the W plane. And we want to know where that goes. Yes. Okay, if W is equal to 1 over Z, the first thing we note is that Z can be solved as 1 over W. Okay? And so Z equals 1 over W, and if Z is 1 over W, then we get the equation. The modulus of z minus 1 less than or equal to 1 becomes the modulus of 1 over w minus 1 is less than or equal to 1. And now that describes all points w. I have to satisfy this, whatever it is. And now we just need to go through and play around with that. So it's a matter of playing around with this inequality. So what do you have? 1 over 1 minus w. Let me write it the following way. Alright, that has to be less than or equal to 1, right? And that's equal to the modulus of 1 minus w over w. So modulus of w must be greater than or equal to the modulus of 1 minus w. All right. can square this. Now we're going to let W be U plus IV. So that we have U and V for the axes, as usual. Modulus squared of W would be U squared plus V squared. And then 1 minus, well, this is the modulus of 1 minus U plus IV squared. So in order to get this correct, that would have to be what? 1 minus U squared plus V squared. All right, I can subtract v squared from both sides and get u squared is greater than or equal to, say, multiplying out 1 minus 2u plus u squared. All right, I haven't done anything illegal yet, have I? The u squareds go away. So I need the region 1 minus 2u is less than or equal to 0. Or 2u is greater than or equal to 1, or u is greater than or equal to 1/2. And so what does that give me? Well, to know where u is greater than or equal to 1/2, that's in a region defined by first looking at u equals 1/2. So u is 1/2. There's a line. And if I want values of u that are bigger than that, and that means this must be mapped into a big piece of the plane. It'll be on the right-hand side of that boundary. Okay? So the circle gets mapped into the edge of this domain.
Right. The circle gets mapped onto the line, equals 1/2. Right, if I want to know the interior of the circle, I need to see where that maps. We could double check this, I guess. If I put z equal to 1, then that corresponds to w equals 1. And w equals 1 is right here. And that seems to satisfy my inequality, right?
Alright, so that's the idea for that problem. Are we happy with that? Maybe. Okay, are we ready for some more? Page 39. Did you say 4?
7?
Oh. Okay. Find the derivative by implicit differentiation. W is equal to the square root of z squared minus 1. Which is going to be the modulus of z squared minus 1 to the 1/2. E to the I times the argument of z squared. Argument of what? Z squared minus 1 divided by 2. Okay. So this just seems to be the normal branch, the principal branch here, the usual branch, and so there shouldn't be any surprises sitting here. All right. Remember, what are we supposed to know here? Actually. All right, one possible way of doing this is to note that w squared is equal to z squared minus 1. And then we can differentiate both sides. And, of course, everything I'm doing is assuming that this is at z sub 0. That's where I want to differentiate this. So if this is differentiable at z0, then we ought to be able to differentiate using implicit differentiation. So the book, when it does examples, it'll actually put the z0 in there and compute it. So let's first differentiate it, assuming we can. The derivative of w squared we know is 2 times w prime. And the derivative of z squared is 2z. And if I want to, I can say this is at z equals z0, and the way the book would write that is 2 w sub 0 w is a function of z0, and then w prime at z0 is equal to 2 z0. And we can solve this for w prime at z0 and get that all the 2's go away, so I get z0 divided by w0, which is equal to z0, and w0 is just evaluate the w, and I get the square root of z0 squared minus 1. And that's it. And if we want, we can evaluate this by just plugging in the polar form, which is what that upstairs is, with the e to the I args junk. Alright, we can just put in for the polar form of w0, z0 in it. So, but that's really all I think there is to that. More. Anything from Shalms? Anything? Anything you saw me put up on the screen? We can go as far back as you want, except, I mean, at least as long as we're in this class, right? Yeah?
Algebra 1.
How far back do you want to go?
Page 22.
Yep, that's not that far. 22.
Number 1.
I just want to do it. Ew. Yeah, that takes a little work. Okay, describe the relative positions of the images of z minus z, z bar, 1 over z, and 1 over z bar on the Riemann sphere. So we want to know what the images look like. Of all of these. Alright, so what do we know? We have the transformations that C is 2x over r squared plus 1. Eta is 2y over r squared plus 1. And zeta equals r squared minus 1 over r squared plus 1. I might give it to you.
That'd be real nice. Because stuff like that is great when you're trying to study.
Alright, given. Or you could try to figure out what it looks like pictorially. You don't need this, actually. If I gave you a particular z. Alright. So we could either look at these and see what happens, or we could try to think about this. Okay. Now how do we do this problem? We first off have a sphere. And then we have a plane. There's the North Pole, there's the South Pole, and we pick a point out here, z is equal to x plus iy. You connect the North Pole to this point with a line, and it intersects the sphere at the point given with the coordinates C, eta, and zeta. And that's the idea. Now if we go back to the question, it says we want the images of z. Alright, so there's z. Now the problem could be a little different if z is outside, right, outside of this inner circle, or inside the inner circle. Okay, where is minus z in the plane? It should be back here somewhere, right? But where do you think the image would be?
180 degrees.
It'd be back up here somewhere. Right? If you connect the line here.
It's hard to draw that.
Yep.
So
yeah, it is.
Test.
Mm-hmm. So, sketching. All right, we have to know where these points lie. So let's start and think about this. Here's z. Minus z means minus x minus y would be over here. And so we would say that's directly behind us. So if that's Wilmington, it must be somewhere, well, I don't know if it's in China, because Probably in the Pacific somewhere. You can get a globe and figure it out.
Yeah, we should do it.
Okay? But we could determine this by letting x go to minus x and y go to minus y in here. The r squared's not affected, right? And so what we see is we're at the same height. It's just that c goes to minus c and eta goes to minus eta for z goes to minus z. Okay. So the x and the y up here change signs. So these basically, right, if you look at the shadow here, it's straight behind. Right? Makes sense. So that's where it is, back in the back. Okay. And then we look at other ones like z bar. Where is z bar in the xy plane? reflected where? All right, z bar is what? X minus iy? So it's reflected, but there it is. Okay.
I guess you could also do a negative z bar if you want.
So where's that? So this guy, this point becomes over here, and so we come over there. So we're going to get a point here, one on the other side, right? And of course, they're all be at the same height. Okay, the three of those images.
What else do we have?
Where did you sit down?
Down here.
One over z and one
so
z bar.
There's z bar. And so this guy connected to the North Pole is going to be here. So we just swing around part way. Right. And then we have, and you can see that. The only thing that changes here would be the sine of the y. So eta changes, and the other two stay fixed. And then we have 1 over z. All right, where is 1 over z? Now that's a little harder to do. Okay. 1 over z is, well, 1 over z is multiplied top and bottom by z bar. So that I get 1 over modulus z squared times z bar.
Now what this is going to do is give me a point, let's see, in the same region as z bar. Where was that down here? But depending upon the modulus of z, it's either going to be closer or further away. That's what it looks like, right? So if I were outside the unit circle to begin with, in the xy plane, then what should be closer? If I'm inside, we should be further away. We should move you guys.
Okay.
I should put a minus sign on the third coordinate and leave the other two unchanged.
Ah, okay. So then the question is, what does that do for this? So what he's saying, what if we take a look at
our coordinates in three space, what's going to happen?
Okay, and what's going to happen is this guy changes. My r, okay, is no longer the same. R changes. Alright? It's going to be one over the other r, so.
But, yeah, so essentially that can change. Let's see. You just have to be a little careful with that. But that's the basic idea. You just go in there, plug in, see what happens. Okay, it's at this point the 1 over z and the 1 over z bars, which
we have to be careful in different cases. Am I outside the unit circle or inside the unit circle? As far as we're matching. And if you're inside the unit circle, of course, what does that tell you? That your intersection point is going to be in the southern hemisphere. Alright.
Your zeta will then change sign. So that's the type of thing. Does that help answer your question? For now? Okay. Yes, Jenny?
The other book.
Do we have another book?
Shalm's Outline Theory, yes.
Page 129.
Whoa. We're that far?
I'm sorry, page 62.
Oh.
Number 129.
No, I was going to say, we went pretty far in the book.
Oh, you had to ask that one.
Yes, I did.
Okay, let W equal
the square root of 4 minus z times z squared plus 4. If w equals 4 when z equals 0, show that if z describes c, then w at 6 is minus 4i square roots of 5. Voila. Okay, so we need a little sketch here. Alright, so we have something. We start at 0. We've got something that goes out here to 6. There's 0, here's 6. This is x and y. This is the z-plane. So z
follows this path. Think of z as a parametrized curve. And when z is 0, w, given by this expression, is 4. If z goes along this curve, then we have to somehow conclude that we get minus 4i square root of 5.
Okay. Alright, what happens when I plug in z equals 0 into that expression?
You get plus or minus.
Generally speaking, we could come up with plus or minus 4 because there are two square roots. Correct? So this tells me I should pick a plus 4. Alright. So what happens when w is, w at z equals 6, when z is equal to 6, so let's take w equals the square root of 4 minus 6 times 4 plus 6 squared, is that right? All right, so this is well, I get a 4.
Negative 8.
Hmm? Did I write something wrong?
Square root of negative 8.
Is that what you want me to write?
That is 40 times negative 2.
Oh, no. Never mind. I was doing something wrong in my head. That's why. Okay. Don't ask me what. Alright. Yeah, so this is a square root of 40. Right? Square root of 40. Alright. So anyway, we have, I don't know. Square root of minus 80, which is equal to, we can take out a 5 and a 16, and so we're going to get a 4 times the square root of minus 5, right? And the square root of minus 5 is plus or minus 4i square root of 5. Now the question is, why would we prefer one sign over the other? As we are approaching 6 from this point.
course, where's all this coming from? It's all coming from the 4 minus 6, right? Let's see. It says show that. It doesn't say prove that. Yeah, it's here. Okay. Okay, right there. Okay. Something's important about the region I just circled.
It's going down.
At some angle. All right, this is my C. See, we don't have any problems back here when z was 0, right? So the question is, what happens as I'm going through here?
Why would the answer be negative in the first place?
Hmm?
Why would the answer be negative in the first place? Why everything's positive in the function?
Well, z is going to be the modulus of z times e to the I theta, correct? In general? Angle's becoming more and more negative.
So that's why it's negative 4i?
Yeah, that's basically what it stems from, just the direction that you're going in there.
So if I was going the other way?
Yeah, if I were coming up this way,
positive.
Okay, I would get a different indicator. Now, how can we show that easily? Can we show it easily? Well, but Jenny's not happy.
Well, I see it when z is 5 or 6. Like, that's where the negative comes in.
Yeah, well, where is z equal? When z is 4, we're happy, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're 4 over here. Somewhere, this angle's changed. Right here, the angle's positive.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that positive angle
is nice, huh? Is there a way I can write this? Okay. What we could do is write z is equal to 4 plus something. I don't know. Would that help? For my parametrization. I don't know. That's not going to work. A, E to the I theta. I'm just trying to think about how to parametrize this.
Right. Theta and A change, I guess, as functions of T. So if I have T equal to 0, and this guy here is actually Z minus 4. Z minus 4, when I take the square root of it, the right square root of A is not a problem. And then I get e to the I theta divided by 2 coming in here, okay, with a certain value. When I get up to this point, theta is 0. So if theta is starting, well, it's hard to tell what theta is starting at here, but it's at least looks positive. And then theta becomes 0. And then when I get over here, theta is negative, right? And so when I divide that negative by I get a negative value, which is what's going to contribute to the negative sign coming out of here. If W is one, show that Z described. If Z describes C, this W actually goes, I think, gets a negative value. So that's a rough explanation. It just has to do with the angle of approach that I'm coming into.
If I were to come down and go up, okay, then it would be slightly different. Except coming down here, this was going to correspond to a z.
Okay, so probably a minus 4 for w.
All right, I'll let you think about that. But that one's a challenge, that's actually a little challenging to show without proving. It takes, you know, one can prove it, but then you have to do a lot of work to prove that. Are you leaving us?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll let you know if I have any
questions.
Okay,
I'm sure you will.
Well, it all depends on how this 5 problems for this week go.
I'll have to go look at them before Tuesday so I can make sure I cover the material.
Make sure we can do them all.
Yes.
How long do you read the question process?
I don't know. I haven't written it yet. Let people do that. The test is usually harder.
What?
It's been proven.
Number 39,
okay.
Problem 7.
I have one more question.
That's fine.
Page 80 in this one.
Okay.
Number 3.
Yes, you are making it harder than you. I was surprised you didn't get that one, but I figured you were.
I stared at so much stuff on that one, and then I was like, this has got to be easier.
All right, this is page 80. Detman.
Those who use the grease thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, let C be a simple, closed, smooth curve with interior R. So here's a C. Alright, we'll give it an appropriate orientation. Show that the area is given by 1/2 the integral of x dy minus y dx. Now it's actually this is in your Calc 3 book. Okay. But at this point, the only thing that we know from our recollection, our immediate recollection, is Green's lemma, or Green's theorem, depending upon the domain. And what we know is that if I have the integral of p dx plus q dy over an appropriate region, that I can write that as a double integral. All right. The partial of q with respect to x minus the partial of p with respect to y. Dx, dy. Okay. Comparing the two of these, okay, up to the 1/2, p looks like minus y and q looks like x. So 1/2 the integral x dy minus y dx is equal to 1/2 the double integral. The partial of x with respect to x is 1. The partial of minus y with respect to y is minus 1. Dx dy. 1 minus a minus 1 is 2. So this is just a double integral over R of dx dy, which we know is the area. QED. Was that as simple as you thought it might be?
I had that one part. Didn't put all the connectors.
Yeah. So that takes care of that. How's that? So you're not deriving this formula. you're just showing that you can get the area from it. I mean, the first thought might be, how do I derive this? But you're not deriving it. You're just
ending up with what you know. Right?
Okay. Well, that's a good book to go to.
It's
page. So we're looking at Shalms.
58, 72. Page 58.
Did you say 72?
Yes.
Okay. Find U and V such that the okay, let's see. We have two different problems here. All right. And we'll look at the first one. A. We want the cinch of 2z to be U plus IV. In other words, another way you can formulate the question, and it may come up this way on the test, is find the real and the imaginary parts of this function. Okay, such as sinh 2z. So that's all you're doing here. Find the real and the imaginary parts. Okay. This relies on a couple of things, like knowing your hyperbolic functions. Okay. So, as a homework problem, I need to fix that. Okay, we go to Google. And we type in hyperbolic. Come on, just to give you an idea. Where am I? Hyperbolic identities. Hyperbolic identities. Let's see what comes up. And there they are. Kind of hard to read that color. But we should know our hyperbolic identities.
Because you can see the cinch of 2x, just 2 cinch x cosh. Okay, that's one way to do it. But sooner or later, you're going to need that the hyperbolic sine of the sum of where's my hyperbolic sine of the sum of 2x? I just gave a double angle formula. That. Sine of A plus sine of B plus sine G.
The equivalent of it, yes.
That's with it.
Okay, maybe that wasn't the. Let's pick another one. There.
Okay, but actually it's right here. Alright, the cinch of the sum is the cinch and then the cosine and volume. There's the, that's what you're supposed to prove. So they jump too far here. Okay.
So that's one way to go about this. Okay, first cinch of so, I'm just trying to think of, the 2 throws it off because I could do, very simply, just 2 times the cinch times the cosh, but that's, I still need the other bit. So, if I want the real and the imaginary parts, I would think this, I would put z equals x plus iy. And then, so this is the hyperbolic sine of 2x plus 2iy. Okay, and so we get the hyperbolic sine
of 2x, the hyperbolic cosine of iy, plus the hyperbolic sine of iy, hyperbolic cosine 2iy, hyperbolic cosine of 2x. Sometimes you may... That is. Oh, I did that. Yep, it is, see? Okay. And then you have to look at things like, what is the hyperbolic cosine of 2i? Well, how do I get the I out? Well, you could just forget the 2 for the time being, as long as we put it back in at the end. But, all right, hyperbolic cosine is e to the argument plus e to the negative of the argument divided by 2. All right? And if you look at that carefully, you'll see that's just the cosine of 2y. Similar to something I had done earlier today. It's just going backwards, going from hyperbolic to trig instead of trig to hyperbolic. And if I want the hyperbolic sine of 2iy, it's e to the 2iy minus e to the minus 2iy divided by 2. I'm off in this case by an I. I need an I. So I can put an I here and an I there so that I get a sine. All right, sine has a 2i in the denominator. So this looks like I times the sine of 2i. Okay? Now you'll notice cosine of iy and hyperbolic cosine of iy give you real numbers. Okay, in this case, and if you looked before. Okay, it's just a question of what happens when I have an iy in a sine or a sinh. That's where the imaginary, that's where the v part is going to come from. Alright, so you can easily see that the u, the real part of this, comes from this term, sinh 2x cos 2y. And then over here, the imaginary part is going to come from the sinh 2y cos 2x. That's just, is it going to be plus or minus? All right, depends what you get when you pull the I out.
Okay. So if we look at that, okay,
we can see what we get. All right, so with that said, sinh 2 of z equals hyperbolic sine of 2x times the cosine of 2y plus I, and this is going to be the sine of 2y cosh 2x. And if you take a look at your answer in the book, that's what we got. And B is done the same way. Just identities. So what I haven't found satisfactorily, because they've mixed some things up here, students, the hyperbolic identity. What is this doing? This must be bringing down a flash or something.
Okay.
Should give me a nice identities table. There you go. The hyperbolic identities. This one. There. That's what I was looking for.
Okay. So you can see that there's the similarities here. All right. The hyperbolic sine gives the plus and the minus just the same way as the sine does. The hyperbolic cosine, on the other hand, does not flip the plus minus sign like the cosine identity does. The cosine of x plus iy is a cosine cosine minus sine sine. So if you look at the actual trig identities, the cosine does the sum of two angles, you get a difference over here. That's not true. All right. But you can see the structure is the same. Generally speaking, it's just every one of the minus sign. And that stems from back here. All right? You can see here.
Pythagorean identity, or it actually is a hyperbolic identity, or it's what it's got a minus instead of a plus. It's a minus sign floating around.
It's nice when you're differentiating because you don't have to worry about a minus sign when you're differentiating cosh and sinh,
like you do with sine and cosine. But there are, I mean, all the identities have similar types of forms, and so you have half angle formulas.
Okay, so that's what you need. That plus knowing the exponential forms for the trig functions and the hyperbolic functions.
In case you have to see how to insert an IY into this. Maybe sine IY or cosh IY. Okay. Does that help?
Any other questions?